Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm. And Craig Sullivan, chief development officer of Broughton Hotels, a boutique hotel management company. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Check Out California. We've got a very special guest with us today, Mr. Tim Edgar. Yay! Tim is an old friend of mine. We go back some 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Look at the people. They can't contain themselves.
See, the live audience just loves it. So, Tim and I initially met when he was a broker. He's had a very traveled career in hospitality. And 2 years ago now, you launched Hotel Investor.
Correct, just a little longer than that.
We got to get him really close to the mic, though. You're almost like he's eating the mic there. There he goes.
Or whatever is comfortable, but just have it close to you.
Okay. Yeah, even closer than that.
And Tim,
you can't get too close.
You're good.
With Hotel Investors, created a crowdfunding platform for hospitality, both debt and equity. Tim, welcome to the show.
Welcome,
Thanks,
Tim.
Craig. Great to see you, Red.
You too. Let's give people the websites. We usually do it later on in the show, but I think let's give them a website. Let's have them a chance to look at it while we're talking.
Sure. It's Hotel Investor, INNVESTOR.com.
Okay. So, again, INNVESTOR.com. Hotel Investor with an extra N.
Correct.
In there.com. And so you guys have known each other for a long time.
Yeah. Over 20 years at this point.
And he's still hanging out.
And we're still talking, yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah. So, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we've been to each other's houses. We both barbecue and we go to conferences together. And we've worked on hotel sales, a number of them over the years.
Absolutely.
And Tim, when he first fired up Hotel Investors, I was trying to put a deal together to buy a hotel up in Central Coast. And he was my first and only lending source that I went to. Unfortunately, we
lost
get
the
deal.
Yeah, it was a great deal.
Well, which is, that's going to happen in this industry, right?
Sure.
Yeah, things happen like this all the time. So I know that Greg's been doing this since the beginning of time.
No.
Okay. But when did you get started?
I actually started in the hotel business in 1991.
Okay.
While I was in college, I did work full-time at the Beverly Hilton Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Great property.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. When I first started, I couldn't wait to go in and see who was staying at the property. And then after about working there for 3 months or so, I quit looking because I realized they weren't there to see me.
That's pretty good. So when you were working there, were you going to school there in L.A.?
I went to University of Southern California,
USC,
graduated.
Yeah.
Yep.
And were you doing something that academically that was related, or
no business? So it was not hotel specific. If I'm not mistaken, I don't believe we have a specific hotel program
focus in USC.
No. Yeah.
Okay,
was that back when Merv Griffin owned the place?
That is correct.
And so
not SC, but the hotel.
So what made you reach
only a small part of it?
What made you work in the hotel industry then? If you were just doing general business, was this a focus interest, or what was the?
It's like how a lot of things work. I think in life, it was a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I knew someone
who knew
that was working there. I knew someone that knew someone had several relatives that were working there. They gave me a good recommendation, and it was, it was a pretty high-paying job, quite frankly, a union job for when I was in school. So,
No, that's great.
It was very advantageous.
Hey, yeah. And what did you do at the Beverly Hills?
Sure, I started in food and beverage. Mm-hmm. So I worked in all of the outlets, primarily room service, which was interesting. I did a lot of,
to say the least.
Yeah, saw some interesting things. That's for sure. It actually then worked into before I left accounting.
Okay, so, I mean, we all know, right, that are in this industry, I think it's applicable probably to a lot of industries, but very much in the service and the hospitality industry, there's no substitute. then that kind of like experience, hands-on.
And a high level of service was obviously expected.
At that property, of course. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Right.
That's very, very cool. And so you were there for how long?
I was at the Beverly Hilton for over 4 years, about 4 years. Again, as things would have it, someone that I knew someone that was brokering hotels, had kind of recently transitioned into out of apartments into exclusively hotels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was another match that was made. And so then I went into a 20-plus year career in hotel brokerage, mm-hmm. Had sold, you know, almost $1.2 billion worth of hotel properties personally.
Just in California, too.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So it was, you know, it was a successful move, but a couple years ago had partnered with my roommate from college at USC, who's has our FINRA licenses that we were required. And we came up with the idea. We saw an opportunity here with the Jobs Act and the ability to generally solicit the availability of raising cash for projects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the driving factors there, what we noticed, what we had called the early adopters, were very much tech-oriented.
You're talking about early adopters to crowdfunding,
crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
There is a technological component to it to be SEC compliant, but we also noticed that it was basically 20-somethings.
Interesting.
And, you know, I've been in hotels for over 20 years. I mean, how much experience in real estate could these people have?
Right.
So we saw that as an opportunity. Clearly, I'd had somebody ask me at one point, why did you pick the most complex form of commercial real estate to start your company?
Because it's fun.
Well, I like a challenge.
Because it's what I know. So, and that's what we did want to bring, quite frankly, though, was an expertise to what we saw was certainly a lot of platforms that didn't really have a real estate expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very cool. And tell people, what does Hotel Investor do?
Sure. Essentially, we form joint ventures with best-in-class owners, operators, developers of hotel properties, and we raise cost-efficient investor capital for their projects. And for the investors, we connect them with these best-in-class people and give them a solid risk-adjusted return. That's essentially what we do.
And this is equity crowdfunding. We had some people tweet in here. Most people are familiar with reward-based crowdfunding. I applaud what you're doing. Here's $20, give me a hat, and I hope that you succeed. But as of, I think it was last year.
I never got a hat.
As of last year, I think it was.
Your deal didn't go through.
I think it was actually this past summer. They finally, or was it the previous summer? They finally approved the equity crowdfunding, where people could actually own equity through these crowdfunding projects.
So that's it's a very interesting distinction that you've hit upon. What was recently passed was what's called Reg CF, Regulation Crowdfunding, which allows for everyone to invest, okay? But there's a lot of restrictions, and it's capped out at $1 million, mm-hmm. okay?
Okay.
What we did, and we jumped in earlier, and it is an equity crowdfunding source, but we used the exemption that was created by Title II of the Jobs Act. I don't want to get too much into the regulations.
Yeah, it's the thing Obama passed a couple years ago.
Right. They were all, the regulation CF was actually Title IV, so there were multiple titles of the Jobs Act. So what we saw, I've actually written a white paper about this. We still utilize the Regulation D-506C. It allows us to generally solicit, which tell anybody about the deal, okay? But you still have to be an accredited investor, okay? Mm-hmm.
And define that just so everybody doesn't know.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul.
It's a SEC definition, and it's basically that you've made $250,000 a year as an individual or $300,000 as a couple for the last 2 years with a reasonable expectation of continuing that, or that you have $1 million net worth excluding your primary residence. Mm-hmm. And essentially, just to understand the SEC's logic, you're investing in illiquid private securities.
Right.
Okay, there's no secondary market as such to exit the investment. So they wanted to at least have a liquidity cushion for these investors.
Should the investment not pan out?
Well, or certainly not start paying when they're supposed to. And so, again, when I wrote this white paper, it basically was speaking to the suitability of, you know, for us, a hotel investment in a private security of someone that's not an accredited investor. First of all, I think there's a suitability issue, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, I feel that you're going to see several lawsuits related to the Reg CF just because people think they understand.
And they never do.
And they're, you know, going to come back in 9 months, 18 months, like, hey, I want my money back. And, you know, the sponsor is going to be like, well, no, sorry, it doesn't work
that way. We disclosed, no, I really didn't understand what you were telling me.
Exactly.
Right.
And the thing, you know, again, that I had touched on a little bit is when you go in front of a judge, and, you know, some people might call them activist judges, especially in the state of California, they are generally going to side with the mom and pop.
The wrong party.
Well, you know.
Actually, that's not a good way to
put
it.
The little guy.
I think that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, because you're right. No.
And that was Rod Gantos, everybody.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a bleeding heart. You know, everybody's a wrong party, right? But no, that's actually very, very good. You know, it's not for everybody. And not everybody should be allowed to. Not allowed, but not.
But crowdfunding was created with the concept that everybody could now invest, that you don't have to have these accreditation boundaries, and that if you want to throw your money into the Wild West, go for it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. We certainly don't believe that. That's not the basically the anchor of our platform. I think there's some real legal concerns with it being completely Wild West. It's one thing if you want to put, you know, $5 in, you know, and get a hat back, you know, but it's another thing when you're investing again in a complicated investment.
Well, and if you doubt it for a split second, look at all the people that basically went into these housing or condo, you know, real estate investment groups. Clubs.
Ticks.
And Thomas, exactly.
That basically put all that money in and basically then ended up, you know, when the market bellied up, they're all basically sucking wind. I mean, so what do you do, Tim, as far as on your platform with that philosophy? I agree with you 100%.
Sure. So the
to
main
filter or to gauge your investors?
Well, so first of all, so the trade-off, there's been an existing Regulation D exemption to the Securities Act. Since like 1988, I believe. But in order to solicit someone for that investment, you had to know that they were a quote-unquote accredited investor before you told them about the deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you were telling it to people that you didn't know,
it's a qualification, basically.
That was illegal and you could get censured or lose your license.
Yeah.
Okay. So the trade-off of the Title II, the new Regulation D exemption, is you can tell anybody about it, okay? But before they can put money into the investment, they have to verify that they are indeed an accredited investor, where they used to be able to self-certify under the previous system. So there was a bit of a trade-off there. What we saw is the opportunity, and what we focused on is our ability to go out, you know, through my relationships of years of being in the hotel business and knowing a lot of really great, best-in-class folks in the business, that we could go out and help them expand into more opportunities with investor capital. But the main thing was the ability to tell everyone about it, to be able to generally solicit it. The way that it works on our platform, if you wanted to put money into the project, you go in, you know, sign up, you basically self-certify to get started and look at the information. But when you actually want to put money in escrow, not to us, but to our broker-dealer partner, it's actually seamless on the website, but it goes directly to them, and they actually do the verification. Mm. Then we get a notice back from our broker-dealer that Craig is an accredited investor. We're accepting his money into escrow.
Yes! Take my money, please.
Take my money.
So have you? Now, so have you had? Sorry, Greg. So have you had situations where you basically have had to, thank people and decline?
No, not as such, because essentially, quite frankly, when you have to submit the documents that you do, and really, it's very simple. Quite frankly, you could provide, a pay stub or tax returns. But the easiest thing to do and what we tell people to do is you can get a letter from your accountant, from your lawyer, or from a registered investment advisor that says Craig is accredited. Okay. Right. And then, but you have to upload that and send that to our broker dealer. What we've found is that they don't do that.
If they're not accredited, they won't do it.
So
it's not going to do that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of that.
Thanks for that.
Now, are you're doing both debt and equity, right?
We can. We have moved away. We were focused somewhat originally on both.
Right.
We've really moved to equity.
Okay.
And part of it is just the debt has been so low historically.
You're going to say interest rates with a conventional lender have got to drive that all up for you. Now, when they start getting to 6, 7, 8, 9% again,
right,
then you can be competitive and you can start. Right. Especially on a refinance scenario, I come to you, let's say conventional lending's at 7%, okay, which may happen in the not too distant future. I don't have a crystal ball, I don't know, just saying. But I come to you and I've got an asset, California Coastal, which we all want, sure. We all love, and I've got little to no debt on it, and I can come to you and you need approximately 70 days to reach out to potential clients,
yeah.
And you could refinance the property. And it's pretty much the same scenario with the equity side. There's different payoffs and returns and anticipation of returns as well. But you've got a stable of clients and various other sources where you can make a phone call and get the heat generated.
I will tell you the there's never enough investor capital.
Never.
We're working on that daily.
Yeah.
Obviously, we do have sources, but it's evolving.
Right.
Their needs evolve. I think the thing...
On a daily basis as well.
One of the things that when we started looking at the debt that we were speaking with some of the investors, they're like, look, I can invest in a junk bond of a, a known corporation and get kind of the equal return that you're talking about, but I can sell that bond tomorrow.
Right.
If I invest in this, even as a debt offering, it's still an illiquid security, and there's no ready way to exit that investment. Right. So, again, it's not – you have to understand what these passive investors – there's generally speaking – I think I can say this 100% correct – that there's no one that I know that is 100% passively invested in hotels, okay?
Yeah.
I can tell you there is a huge number of passive investors that are 100% not invested in hotels and won't invest in hotels. We have to look at what's in the market and what their alternatives are. And I think you hit it precisely on the head. Reasons why we focus to the equity side is we can go out, and get debt still – That's ridiculously low on a historical basis for hotels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we do think that that's something, as interest rates do go back up, that,
it's an opportunity
to grow. And again, we can certainly legally do that. But
somebody tweeted in again, what is a typical, I know there's not just one deal, but give me a typical deal. Do people stay in this for the life of the hotel? Is this something they get in and get out of at some point in time, get paid off?
Sure.
What kind of deals are you trying to structure through this?
So this is probably the second question that an investor is going to ask is, how do I get my money back?
Right.
Okay, or when do I get my money back? Right. And what we do, again, we're creating a joint venture. So, for instance, we're a minority owner in a full-service Marriott on the campus of the University of Utah. And the sponsor of that deal told us when we, before we brought in the money, that their objective is a 10-year hold.
Yeah.
Okay, so we convey that to the investors. It's not, if we can look at it as hotel investor and see if we think it's something that's unreasonable, and then we decide whether we want to work on raising capital for that project. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the answer to the tweet is we convey as honestly as, you know, as we're told from the sponsor what the game plan is.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain instances, people might be, okay, we're going to build this hotel and look to sell it to a REIT in, you know, 2 years, 3 years from opening.
Right.
I wouldn't, you know, say that that's necessarily a game plan of ours. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the investments really are at least 5 to 10 years anticipated.
Yeah.
And during that time, do they participate in the revenue from the hotel, or are they just waiting someday to sell it?
No. The way that we structure basically every deal is on a preferred return basis. So there's a not only are they getting part of the revenue, but they would be getting, you know, depending 8 to 10% return on their equity before the sponsor gets anything.
Yeah.
And then once they get their preferred return, then there could even be an outsized split of cash flow to the investor until they get their original capital back. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, from the sponsor standpoint, they do have some motivation when you're paying a preferred return to get the investor's capital back as quickly as possible.
Get them out of the deal.
Well, not out of the deal. They still have their ownership, but you don't have to pay them the preferred return anymore.
Right, okay.
And it goes completely pari passu.
Right.
So you're just getting your fair share.
Yeah.
There's absolutely cash flow and a preferred return. But, you know, again, you have to look at each deal. If it's a turnaround situation, rebranding situation, you know, that
ground
cash flow.
Up any number of things.
Well, I'm saying, yeah, definitely a new development deal. That cash flow is not going to be in month one.
Yeah.
So that's why you have to.
Can I just ask one question just from my own understanding here? So you've talked. Okay. I'll shut up then. How, what kind, other than that they're accredited investors, what kind, give me the personality types. Who invests in hotel? Are these people that have some passion for the business, or is this a dispassionate, they could be investing in shopping centers, or they could be investing in oil and gas or whatever?
Sure. What does it appeal to?
It helps, quite frankly, I will tell you, having been doing this for a little time now, if they have some exposure, it would be even better if they had a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the kind of model investor here is someone that's in natural gas, is in apartments, is in, you know, in the stock market,
yeah,
in bonds.
Yeah.
It's a passive investor. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't own, or I'm sorry, we don't operate, we don't actually develop. We partner with people that have a successful track record of doing that.
Right.
So obviously our investors aren't running the property or building the property. So you're dealing with people that have money that they're trying to place for a return. And generally, diversification is a big part of that.
Part of it, yeah.
And, you know, again, there is a much larger percentage of the passive investors that will not invest in hotels.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then even among those.
And why is that? Because of the long time frames involved?
No. I don't
understand.
It's a business.
It's, yeah,
it's an operating business that real estate is one of the assets.
Yeah.
It's much different. Here's the best way to explain that is a hotel essentially has a night to night lease. If you get into an office building, you'd have, you know, a 10-year lease. You get into an apartment building, you've got like a 1-year lease.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier for a
24-hour lease.
If you don't operate the business, if you're not the you know, active person involved,
mm-hmm,
it's much easier to understand a triple net lease. Okay, I get this much each month from the tenant.
Right.
Then, okay, the summer we do really well, and the winter maybe not so much.
So much. Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we've heard time and again, quite frankly, is it's, you know, I understand hotels have a good return. I just don't understand the business. I don't feel comfortable
putting my money in.
So last question, if you are doing a crowdfunding approach.
For now, we're going to a break.
I understand. We're going to a break. Do you then, in your company, go out and try and approach the investors directly, or are you still going through middlemen like RIAs?
We actually try to employ both of those methods. I mean, we fully cooperate with other broker-dealers and with registered investment advisors. But we obviously have a database of our own of you know, actual investors.
Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands.
That's true. but, you know, at the end of the day, our job is to achieve the goal of the sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, raise the capital that they need to close out this joint venture. And if we have to do that by cooperating, then we absolutely will do that. But again, like I said, every day we're trying to meet, you know, new sources of especially direct capital.
I'm just wondering, because you're doing crowdfunding, so it would appeal, sound like you're going directly to people,
yeah,
as opposed to the traditional way of you go meet a bunch of RAs or whatever, and they take their clients and present this.
I think there's still a pocket of crowdfunded investors or funding investors that are going to be interested in this, and some that are going to shy away from it because of discomfort with the field.
Right.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back. I really want to start when we come back with what kind of hotels you guys focus on. Maybe we talk about some.
Well, actually, before we do that, I'd like to ask, I want to, yeah, how crowdfunding is different from the more traditional syndications.
Okay. Sure.
We go to the break. Let's touch on that, and then we'll talk about the hotels.
Excellent.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
And we are back. So, Tim, let's give our audience a little taste of how crowdfunding is different from the traditional syndication.
And just before we do, just for those who are joining us after the break, just we have in the studio Mr. Tim Edgar from Hotel Investor, INNVESTOR. And you can look up the website hotelinvestor.com. Again, HOTELINNVESTOR.
Very clever name, the Investor. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
So Greg, you asked a question before we went on break about the difference, I think, between traditional and syndication and crowdfunding. What's the difference, right?
That's it.
Yeah, to a certain extent, they're very subtle differences. But the big ones for the investor and for the sponsor is that we are FINRA sponsored. We are FINRA licensed, excuse me. And we are a registered representative of our broker dealer partner, North Capital Private Securities. When someone does a real estate syndication, in most cases, you're going to see at the bottom, this is not a security, you know, and some disclaimers. And that may or may not be true, quite frankly, whether it constitutes a security or not. In this case, it is absolutely a security. It says it's a security that's offered through North Capital. But more importantly, is it's thoroughly vetted, mm-hmm. okay? I literally can't send an email to more than 15 people without it being approved by our compliance from our broker-dealer.
Dealer, yeah.
When we go and do an offering, you know, we could have a 200-page-plus private placement memorandum. That document is thoroughly vetted. All of the due diligence that went into that document and is reviewed and vetted, we have to do a bad actor check for all of the key players of the sponsor group. And that information is all compiled, reviewed, vetted, and then approved as a compliant private securities offer. Okay? And you can actually justifiably rely on the broker-dealer. They're putting their approval on that this is a compliant offering. If you go into a traditional real estate syndication, most of the things that you're going to see in the that are not good in a syndication is projected returns.
Right.
You know, oh, you're guaranteed to make this type of... I mean,
you don't use that word. You shy away from that.
Right. G-word.
Well, yeah. You can't use it. Yeah. But those are the type of things that you would see in some of the shoddier...
There are no guarantees.
Right. So some of that stuff is red flags. I mean, then what we're talking about here is that vetting is super important, and when you don't see that, then you should have your guard up and look a little closer before you start writing with your money.
So somebody else wanted to know, is this sort of like Realty Mogul or any of those sorts of online platforms where people can just go find deals and invest in them?
It's similar. The difference, first of all, we actually have the same broker-dealer, so it's very similar.
Okay.
In fact, use essentially the same exemption. But they, first of all, none of those groups do hotels, and they do a lot of different things where we only do hotels because that's what we have an expertise in.
That's the difference.
But the other thing that you're seeing is part of this evolution of quote unquote crowdfunding is when you look at the biggest players like Realty Mogul, Realty Shares, Fundrise, they have all gone more to what they call an E-REIT, which basically an electronic real estate investment trust. There's really no such thing. It's just a REIT. But instead of pushing the individual projects, which they still do, their real push is to get you to put $5,000 into their E-REIT, and they're going to go invest it for you.
For you.
Okay. Yeah. And the pitch there is, hey, you know, you can own real estate for as little as $5,000. You know, so that's... We have similarities, but at the same time, we're extremely focused in our expertise, and you know,
you're not doing that. You're doing it's a project by project basis.
Yeah. Correct.
All hotels across the country.
So you're not creating a fund to purchase hotels. You're doing a project.
Yeah, you're not buying into the fund. You're actually investing in the project.
Right, and that's what you know. We need to make sure when we're talking to sponsors that they understand this isn't a fund. We don't have, you know, $20 million in the bank, and we're just going to write you a check. You know, we're going to go source investors specifically that we think, you know, will fit with this project and raise the capital.
Has this been the holy grail that people hoped it would in opening up a flood of money, investing into think maybe the funds more because people who couldn't previously invest now can put $5,000 and be part of a fund and own some apartment buildings or commercial buildings or something in these other examples?
I think I would definitely say I don't believe it's the holy grail in a sense.
And it's not hotels.
I'm just saying.
It's definitely revolutionized real estate and in particular commercial real estate.
It's changed.
I think that you're going to see further growth in this market. I mean, it's had pretty solid growth year over year. To start with, but just to jump ahead of what we were talking about, I think there was a lot of people, like we talked about, the early adopters that were more tech-oriented and light on real estate experience.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those folks are not around anymore.
Okay?
And there was this kind of field of dreams mentality that, oh, I'm going to put together this awesome website and, you know, it's going to be really
money
great.
Money will flow in.
Exactly,
right.
And all this money's going to come in. You know, I think when you look at the success of, like, a Realty Mogul, let's say, who's been very successful, part of that was they started with, like, residential rehabs and you know, started with, like, $50,000 raises, $85,000 raises, and they've worked up, you know, to bigger amounts. But, you know, for the type of hotels that we want to be involved in, they're multi-million-dollar raises. And it just doesn't work that way that we're going to put it out there. So as much as it's crowdfunding.
Specific crowdfunding.
Right. And it's still very much an analog world in terms of how you access the investors in a lot of ways. They have the ease of being able to invest the money through our SEC compliant platform, sign all the documents electronically, get all the due diligence electronically, you know, deposit the money in escrow electronically, which is part of what I think the revolution is, if you will.
The convenience.
The convenience. But in terms of this holy grail of you just build it and all this money is going to flood in, I don't...
That's not going to happen.
And I'm not sure that it should.
Right.
You know,
it should.
Frankly.
No,
it should.
It's part of a checks and balances, to be honest.
You know, again, I'm not I'm certainly not casting stones at anybody, but one of the things to remember, especially about these e-REITs, is we have not seen the test of time yet.
Right.
So there were still some 20-somethings that were involved that had good technology that have now been able to raise a lot of money. And, you know, we'll
see. What they do with it.
Yeah, we'll see. Exactly. And, you know, right. how it... I mean, you know, obviously the high tide raises all boats.
Are there others? Somebody else want to know if there are others like you, or are you unique in this space?
And Tim is very unique. I can guess that.
Are you the only one like this, or are there others doing something?
When you say like this, you're specific hotels. To hotels.
Put it this way. I think most people remember that Realty Mogul had a very big splash when they did the Hard Rock in Palm Springs. Was like $1.5 million, but it was the first one that was done. They no longer do hotels. There's a couple other groups that are kind of out there, but that honestly, when we've talked to our broker dealer, do not appear to be compliant. So, I'm not...
So we don't want to name them, right? We don't want to get into it. But there might be some others playing in the space as well.
Put it this way. I don't think there's anybody that's doing exclusively hotels. There's a couple others that have looked at hotels or worked on hotels. But
yeah. Tim's the only one out there that's exclusively serving the hotel sector.
There's an aspect to this that's sort of rational, right? If you're going to basically dip your toe and you have the means to do it to qualify as a certified investor in this business, which in it we all know, we joke, right? We chuckle that it's its own animal,
right.
Really, right? Has
it
always
is.
Been,
right.
Will always be,
yeah.
Right? It changes all the time, so it's its own animal that changes all the time. So try to keep up on that. But
chameleon in a bag of Skittles.
It really is. It really is, right? And like even that. When you're watching, it changes,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think. There's something to be said with going with an expert specifically focused
exactly.
on the industry to basically have you be that have that guide in your investment, right?
Yep.
Otherwise, it's like going to any broker that doesn't specialize in a particular thing. They specialize in everything, and they're master of none.
But, right.
I was going to say, but try to find a broker like that.
Right.
I mean, they're probably 70 years old. They just don't do that in brokerage anymore.
Right. Exactly. No.
I mean, even within office buildings,
exactly.
You've got creative office, medical office.
Right. Right.
So even in brokerage, they've gotten beyond that. But you're 100% right.
Right. So I mean, it's just like I was saying that rational component that if you're that serious an investor, and I don't want to even say the average, but just a standard. Investment when it comes to a hotel like you that you guys are putting together, what kind of numbers are you talking about?
In terms of the total raise?
Yeah.
We focus on plus minus $5 million.
Okay. And how many people usually are involved in that kind of...
Is there a minimum investment, a threshold?
Here's the thing. Our minimum investments are usually $25,000 to $50,000. But I'll tell you, like the pyramid of success, our goal is not to raise $5 million, $50,000 at a time.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
we've been
pretty lucky that we've had situations where we've basically had like a family come in and take either the majority or the whole thing down.
Right.
And that's, from the timing and raising the capital and getting that capital to the sponsor and commencing the project, it's a much shorter time frame, the less investors that you have involved.
Right.
Okay?
So your intention is to have lesser investors necessarily.
Right.
But it's a $5 million plus.
Right.
And for that, again, going to that point, is that serious money? I mean, you
sure.
got people that. So if I'm looking to put that kind of money, I want somebody that specifically expertise is in the
hospitality
industry.
Sector.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Although that's chump change for Craig, really.
No, no, no.
Chump change.
Stop that.
He was yawning.
Not true. That is not true.
So Tim,
I barely have two nickels to rub together.
And he showed them to me.
And they're well worn.
Wait, it's not that kind of show. It's not that kind of show. Right. Tim, let me ask you.
Sure.
So is it limited to individuals or, like you said, families? Or do you actually have, like, specialized institutional investment that comes in because this is appealing to them?
So the spot that we've tried to position ourselves in, basically, really topping out around $10 million. I mean, we've got a new development project at DFW Airport. That's $11 million.
Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that one out. Yeah.
Sorry. That's a what you call a family office,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's one family office that's doing we're under a letter of intent to provide the whole $11 million.
Nice.
And so this is kind of an up-and-coming class of investor where they have enough money that they've hired people
to manage it
and to invest it for them. But they don't necessarily, I mean, certainly the ones we're kind of focused on aren't big enough that they're seeing every single deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like an institutional investor. And quite frankly, a lot of the institutional investors, they don't want to touch anything less than $10
million. $10 million, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, so you're in a sweet spot between 5 and 10 to appeal to that person that maybe can get in on the institution.
And family offices are a huge growing phenomenon. There have been articles around. We did a show on the station here for a number of years about family offices. This is one of them. No, I mean, family offices are a big force that most people understand where wealthy people pull their money together and create these.
And they have enough money in there, and it's serious enough.
So let's take that money from the family office space and let's move it into the hotel sector, okay?
Right.
And again, Tim Edgar at Hotel Investor.
Investor
is the one to talk to. Let's get back to Rod's question prior to the break. Where and what kind of hotels are you focusing on right now?
I think it's a great question relative to what we were talking about, where we're positioning ourselves.
Yeah.
So we're primarily focused on branded, mid-market, upper mid-market, select service, extended stay, premium limited service, really in the top 100 metropolitan areas in the country.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, we don't... When you have a private security, obviously the sponsorship's very important. There's, you know, the background check, everything, all that. But there also needs to be an infrastructure involved from a financial reporting standpoint and to be able to, you know, get the tax documents and all those things. And then, so we're not really on the economy side, but we're not focused really on the luxury side of it either, because those projects are so big that they're basically dealing with institutions for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we're talking about, you know, like a Marriott brand extended stay that we're working on here in Irvine.
Yes, our backyard.
You know,
let's do a remote there once you open it.
Yeah.
All right. You know, that's the type of project that, you know, we can add value to that is harder to get from the institutional players. But it's still... You know, a very solid project.
So here's an interesting question, I think. Is there something to be said about the cachet? Like for an investor, like an institutional investor, right, or institutions that are investing, we're talking about these large properties, these resort destination properties, right?
Sure.
Are they looking at a little bit of that, oh, this is the level, this is what we've invested in? It's like, you know, it's like, is there a cachet component that people at that level gravitate towards, leaving all this under service, which is where your sweet spot is?
You know, I there's an element to that, but I'd almost say that that's more the super high net worth individual that has the buy a sports team mentality, which is, oh, look what I own. But
my friend has this. I
need to have this buy one, before right? seasons.
But furthermore, to a certain extent, I think one of the things that you need to understand within the hotel range, when you get into that luxury market, okay, you're really talking about, in a lot of cases, one-of-a-kind type assets or very, very hard to duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
Things along the California coast, that you wouldn't be able to replace.
Right.
And so for certain investment criteria, their goal isn't necessarily cash flow. Their goal is to have that money be there in 10 years. Okay,
right.
So you don't necessarily invest in a Ritz-Carlton because you need a check next month from cash flow, okay?
Right.
You invest in a Ritz-Carlton because in 10 years from now, there will always, it doesn't matter where you are in the real estate cycle, there will always be a buyer for that property.
Right.
And you're most likely not going to lose money in that investment. So that's a different investment strategy, if you will.
But I guess where I was going with this, Tim, is though that sector, if you will, call it a sector, or that level, is appealing to those kind of people that have that as a criteria for an investment.
Right.
Leaving all this other stuff that's sort of like, it's interesting that you're saying between 5 and 10 million that's sort of available.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, has that been underserviced as far as investment?
I mean,
absolutely.
There's no question. And that, you know, it kind of lined up more with my experience and brokerage and all the properties that I'd sold, and
right.
that there was sometimes, you know, very good sponsors that had the infrastructure, you know, were good people,
right.
but, you know, didn't have the capital, or their, you know, the doctors and dentists that they were dealing with didn't come through, so the deal didn't get done. And from what I saw, there was a lot of, there wasn't a lot of professionalism at that level,
right.
Okay? You know, if you were looking for...
Sophisticated.
Right. Yeah. If you were looking for $20 million, you could go to Morgan Stanley or, you know,
right.
someone like that and get it done. But
right.
That was the opportunity that we saw.
No, it's brilliant, because that's usually how you identify a niche that's underserviced, right? I mean, it's great, because by actually focusing on a range of that investment... And on this underserved, and I didn't know the answer. Like, when I was asking, is this tradition underserviced as far as investment? Yeah, it makes perfect sense, because you got these individuals, we're reaching out to them, they don't come through.
Right.
You know, it's not level of sophistication, and yet that is where it's most direly needed.
Right.
And so you guys step in and basically provide that service.
You know, one of the things that we saw about that, just to add on to
yeah,
that,
yeah.
is the Eastern Indian hotel owners, mm-hmm. okay, are an absolute force and a growing force
absolutely.
In the U.S. Yeah. Hotel market, okay? And what we've seen is you had, people that had come, actually immigrated from India, that had maybe got into roadside motels mm-hmm. or things like
exactly.
that now have, you know, second, third generation Cornell graduates, like Noble Investment, you know, that's a publicly traded New York Stock Exchange real estate investment trust, that are now very sophisticated. Well, they don't need my help right now.
Right.
But there's a number of growing, you know, Asian American,
concentrations of holdings.
Well, but that have built up significant holdings and significant mm-hmm. infrastructure
right.
in their management companies that, quite frankly, haven't had the same access to again the Morgan Stanleys and, you know, Lehman Brothers back in the day. And because of my intimate knowledge mm-hmm. with the hotel industry, and also with a great number of Indian clients that mm-hmm. we're very successful with, that was part of what we saw as the underserved market.
Tim's absolutely right on that. And, you know, Tim and I share a lot of mutual clients, and we've got one group out of Texas that we've dealt with for decades. And they were a family hotel company,
mm-hmm.
and they were having some phenomenal growth. And then a couple of things happened. They got an equity partner, which was the Teachers Credit Union out of Canada,
mm-hmm.
and then they got Goldman Sachs as their other equity partner. And now they're a global force. They've got over 400 hotels in the United States, another 4 in Canada.
They don't need me anymore.
Yeah, and right. Tim was selling their hotels. They've got a bunch, yeah, probably another 300 or so in throughout Europe, and 13 in the Asia Pacific market. So, you know, these owners, when they do get that shot
point.
at getting the right equity partners behind them,
yep.
can do tremendous things. And yeah, that's just one example of a client that Tim and I work
with.
Well,
it was a couple of cycles ago. It was insurance companies, right? I mean, it's interesting.
Medical?
Huh?
Medical?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, medical.
But
when I paid for it with my spider bite.
But Rad, I would say, yeah. again...
Toll roads.
I believe if when you saw those insurance companies,
yeah.
most of them were still looking at like $10 million minimum,
right.
and they
right. absolutely,
yeah. But they didn't. When they say $10 million minimum, it's like, well, I guess maybe I'll look at something, but I don't really want to look at it. You know.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I even brought that up is it's interesting. Again, kind of a uniqueness of this industry is that you'll have these groups that will flow through. Right, that like that
right.
certain appeal, but certain sectors that will appeal to the hotel industry will appeal to. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of the things that I had wanted to talk about, because we're hearing right now a lot of people talk about like the tired metaphor, in my opinion, of what inning are we in the
right,
cycle?
Exactly.
And you know, or you have a lot of people that are kind of doom and gloom,
mm-hmm.
and I look at the data. Okay, so growth has decelerated, okay, but we're still positively growing
right.
as an industry.
Right.
And, you know, there's other factors that I get. Believe me, you know, we're not looking at new development in Houston right now, okay? And there's other markets that we would be very
leery. Yeah,
market
specific. Yeah.
But the thing that you touched on, okay, is that there's a lot of sector plays.
Right.
Okay, different investors that come in and out of hotels
yep.
because, oh, hotels are hot right now. we feel very confident about our ability to generate positive returns for our investors, you know, for the foreseeable future for sure. But part of that is because we understand the business so well, we partner with the right sponsorship that we don't have to buy something REO, a bank repossession,
right,
at $40,000 a room and have the market go up.
You're not looking for underperforming. You're looking for just enough funding to take it to the next level.
We will do underperforming. That's part of it. But that's the thing that I'm telling you is we can partner with a group that we have comfort with that can take something and identify why it's underperforming. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what they can do to add value to it and still create value for our investors. And what happens is when you have these people that are in the sector play leave the market, that also generally helps ease the prices going up because now you don't have as many people that are going after the same assets.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But the thing is, this is not a sector play for us. Hotels is, yes, you know, is what we know. This is all
what
we do.
And
we're going to partner with people that can add value in any segment of the
cycle. So you're talking
cycle.
You're talking about that existing and underperforming. What about new? You get a guy's
involved
in you?
We have and we are.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, I'd mentioned the project that we have at DFW, just tremendous sponsorship.
That one here in Orange County.
And right. The one here in Orange County. And we've got another really nice project, LEED certified project at the Philadelphia airport that we're working on right now as
nice.
Well.
Can we talk about the one in Orange County? Which one is it? Or is it?
I don't think he's got it done yet. So.
It hasn't closed the funding yet on that in the next couple of weeks, but it's close to John Wayne Airport. It's a Marriott product, extended stay. We were able to source, basically put the deal together from
awesome.
Soup to nuts, so to speak.
Nice.
So let's end with this because I know we're almost running out of time. Specific to California, since we are kind of California focused. Mm-hmm. Now you said that you guys are definitely not sector play. You know, you're in it for the long haul.
Correct.
How do you feel about the California market? Is there an advantage to the California market? Is it pretty standard across the country?
No. Quite frankly, especially since working across the country, California is the major leagues, okay? Essentially, you're not a national player if you're not in California.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a reason. I mean, I've worked in the industry here basically
exclusively
since 1991.
Until 2.5 years ago.
You know, it's harder to get projects approved here.
Mm-hmm.
It's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the average rate that you can get even for mid-market brands is a huge premium to kind of what their brand average might be, you know, all over the country or what they can get across the country. So, and there's a lot of, you know, when you're talking about, you'll hear this a lot, barriers to entry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go to Florida and build a 40-story building right on the beach,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's never going to happen in California.
No.
So, you know, you have certain things that are either grandfathered in or you get an opportunity to do something. There's true barriers to entry from somebody coming in and competing with you and deteriorating the value of your assets. So there's no question that California is...
So that's an interesting take on it, right? Because you hear all about the negativity of barriers to entry and things take forever in California and it takes, you know, it's harder to do it. And you just said that basically, but the reward side of it, once you are actually doing it, and also, and very interestingly, that the barrier to entry also protects
the value of your
the value
assets.
Of your assets.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. We don't hear that enough. That there's actually a positive to the negative. If
right.
You, right.
That's
so
that's
we're getting
the silver
finger
lining.
From Paul to wrap it up. So I want to thank Tim Edgar, Hotel Investor, for being our guest today. Tim and Hotel Investor are also a sponsor of the California Lodging Investment Conference, and I thank you very much
which
for
is,
your participation in
which,
that.
Which is Greg's baby, and it's in second year.
Second year next
second year. First
second
year sold
year
out.
We're involved.
Yes.
And second year that Tim has been involved, and we look forward to – give him the website, Greg.
It's cliconference.com, and it's one other thing I need to say. I want to thank Chris Hostert and Edward Las Vita, the principals behind Park West General Contractors, for sponsoring part of today's show. So thank you guys for that.
If you don't go and register for the conference, one, you will probably lose out because it sold out last year. Secondly, Greg may come find you. So you don't want either of those to happen. And
God knows you don't want me showing up on your front door.
Yeah, okay? Trust me, you don't want him showing up.
And what's the date for the conference? Somebody might know.
It is March 8th, and it'll be at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport.
It's a great conference. Last year, I'm not kidding, it sold out. And it's a one-day conference focused in California. There isn't another conference that's solely focused on California.
Correct.
So thanks, Greg, for bringing that. California needed its own
little
catch-up.
I want to thank my sponsor, Tim Edgar.
And the sponsors that made it happen last year. It was an awesome day. Look forward to it. And as we are about to end the show, I want to give you this from Greg and I.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show.
Is that an award? Is that a plaque? Is that an award?
It's just a little
memento.
Thank you for being on the show.
A memento.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate the time, and I had a good had a lot of fun.
Tim, we'll have you back on after the lodging conference, and we'll talk about some more of your projects and where you see the market going, and let's get some prognostications for you for 2018 that'll tie into the Click conference.
So, sounds great.
So, thank you.
Okay, so everybody, please join us on the 1st and the 3rd Wednesdays, 1 to 2. On Check Out California, your key to California hospitality. Also, check out our Facebook page, and we will soon have a podcast as well as a website with all our great guests. It's awesome, man. Every time we have the show, it gets better and better.
Better and better.
Tim, thank you so
much.
We're on
a roll.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
Thank
you. Appreciate you being
here.
Thank
you, Paul, for manning the board.
Paul,
thank you,
Paul.
Always.
Hey, and we also got tweets in today for the first time.
Yes. Thank you for handling the tweeters,
too. Thank you.